This podcast is brought to you by Zeno Mueller, three-time Olympian and gold medalist. Imagine a 20-second 2K PR by the end of this season, or even sooner. Elite rowing coach by Zeno Mueller is a competitive advantage. The ERG score is the SAT of rowing, so find out what Zeno Mueller can do for you. Make sure to use coupon 4STARS, F-O-R-S-T-A-R-S, for $200 off on any program he has on his website. Zeno is an Olympian and graduate from Brown University, coached by the legendary Steve Gladstone. He'll get you right, he'll get your 2K down, and you'll be a better athlete after his training. So make sure you tune in with Zeno and get some coaching at eliterowingcoach.com.
We're not trying to stay fit. We're trying to make warriors here. And when you're trying to make lean, mean fighting machines, it takes more than 10K a day.
On tonight's program, ladies and gentlemen, we have something that's going to make you sick.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the 4STARS podcast. This is our first podcast of 2024, and I'm super excited to announce that we have Todd Kennett, head coach of Cornell Heavies, on the podcast. He is out in Orlando on his training trip. Todd Kennett, how you doing?
Great, great. How are you doing? I like being first. That's awesome. First of 24.
Yes, sir. First 24. So you're in Orlando, but I wanted to talk about the spring season.
We sort of have a home warm-up with a round robin that we invite some people, local people, to come have a warm-up round in late March. So it's very questionable on the weather and how much water we have in the lake. So it's a questionable stuff. But the first real weight race weekend is opening in at Harvard. So we're super excited for that. The Robinson Cup, named after a captain, Jack Robinson, who passed away just a few years ago. It's named after him. So it's a special meaning to us. And a lot of these seniors knew him especially well as a great friend and their Commodore captain. So I think there's a lot of emotion that's going to go into that race. So we're really excited for that. We have an open weekend after that, but then we're looking at a pretty good schedule in terms of, we have the GOES Cup, GOES Trophy, actually. It's Navy Syracuse, and that's always a burner. Somehow everybody shows up for that. That's up at Syracuse this year, which is always fun, racing off the lake into their cut. The weekend after that, we're looking at the Carnegie Cup, so Yale and Princeton, and that's at home this year, so that'll be a lot of fun seeing them have the Bulldogs and the Tigers come around. And then the weekend after that, we have a huge extravaganza where Oregon State University flies out, so the Beavers come to Ithaca, they train for a couple days, and then Friday afternoon, we race them. Holy Cross and University of Pennsylvania come, they race. Saturday morning, you have a second race, and that's Cornell with the Madeira Cup with Pennsylvania. And then at noontime, we have a third race where we'll end up racing Holy Cross. So it's sort of a big extravaganza of a weekend. So, and then obviously two weekends, the sprints and the IRA, a couple weekends after that. So should be pretty fun.
You know what's awesome about this is that you're not just racing East Coast teams. Is that we got the entire country involved with this.
It's really good for the sport when we do that. The more crossover we get, the bigger this sport becomes and more important it becomes, I think. But, you know, when you get somebody coming from that far, there's always the excitement of having somebody come. And for us, it's when you have Oregon come, it's really fun because first Gabe Winkler rode for me at Cornell. He was a lightweight for me. So and then he comes in. And if you know Gabe, he's got a wild, loose cannon when it comes to competitiveness, and he gets his guys pretty jazzed up for it. And we get to know them a little bit because they train for a couple of days with us, and usually the guys take them to dinner or something like that. So, and then the race gets a little more personal. So it's a great time, and it becomes pretty fierce.
Gabe Winkler, a legend. I had him on the show. You've been a coach at Cornell for a very long time, right? And you've done multiple training trips, but I wanted to know what you've seen out of your guys at Cornell this time around, the development that you've seen with the athletes.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because I've had groups in similar situations where they start similar, end similar, but this group is unique because a lot of them came out of the COVID years. And I think that was probably something that none of us have ever seen anything like it before, you know, in terms of Cornell said they're going to have school and then we came back and it was all virtual. So even though everybody came back, so for basically a year and a quarter, whatever it was, everybody's locked in a room and nobody really trained, not training in the way that a team did. You know, you didn't have that push of the guy next to you. So they lost that year or two of development of having ultra competitiveness, of being able to look over and see, oh man, that guy's two splits ahead of me. I got to try to do better than him. Or, you know, I'm winning. I like winning. I'm going to grind it home a little more, whichever one you are. But, you know, they didn't have that ability. So they didn't get, I don't think they really got pushed as hard as they needed to or got as tough as they needed to. And we've been struggling for the last year and a half to get that work ethic back and that eye of the tiger, you know, let's get in there and grind and having guys looking and saying, I really want to try to break 6 minutes. You know, this is really important to me, or lifting X amount of weight or doing whatever the test is that day or the challenge. So it's really fun because I think this group of seniors has taken that on pretty hard and they're starting to get some really good results with that. You know, they're really, you just look at the boats, you know, we were just out for a 20K tech row this morning, and on the way home, I was like, all right, let's go. Here we go. At a 20, just good, long, firm push. And next thing you know, about 3 to 4 or 5 minutes in, I'm starting to see guys, you know, doing the glimpse over. Where's that boat? And then as they went harder, you could see that boat would take the lead. And all of a sudden the other boat would start looking over, and it was getting better. And I just let it run for like 12 minutes. And now by the time the end, it was like, they were trucking. They had some really good splits. So, you know, that's what you're looking for as a coach. So there you go.
There's this funny thing that happened. Scott Cockle, the coach at Brown, he had made a TikTok of this guy looking over his shoulder, and it went viral. Like, the entire world went viral, and he was like, wow, this guy is looking over his shoulder at his competition, and it goes viral as nuts. But my coach in high school talked about this a lot, and he said, like, when a coach can find an athlete that's naturally competitive, it's awesome, because it's so hard to find that. When you're looking at recruits, how do you find that, or how do you seem to, you know, if it's the assistant coach going on a visit and seeing it in person, it's hard to get those athletes.
You know, the bumper sticker from Missouri, you know what the saying from Missouri is? The show me state, show me. And that's my favorite phrase. If I had a nickel for every kid that told me, oh, I'm going to work really hard, coach, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'd be really rich. You know, it's the kid that comes to you now as juniors, there's a lot of juniors that are contacting us. And it's that kid that comes in, I'm 6:40, coach, but I dropped a minute from last year and I'm still going. And then I start getting an email from him like every 3 weeks. Hey, coach, I dropped another 2 seconds. Hey, coach, I tried it again. I did it again. That's the kid that I just salivate about, because, you know, he's just like, he's the show me state. Here it is. You want to see it? I'll show it to you, coach. You want that? And you know, when you get that guy, that you just can't beat that stuff. Or the other kind is the kid that you say, you know, you have some kind of meter challenge over break, and in terms of recruits, when you ask about recruits, it'd be, you call up a head coach, some high school coach, and he starts telling you, well, we had a meter challenge and this kid ran away with it. You know, and you start talking about that, but it reminds me of a story. This kid, Pat Moore, who just graduated a couple of years ago, he comes in one day. He goes, yeah, you know, coach, I was over break and I was home. He lived in Jacksonville, Florida, and it was really hot one day. He goes, but I went out for a jog in the morning. So I'm jogging along, coach. And next thing I realized, I was out at about 13 miles. So I was going to call my mom to pick her up. But I realized, you know, if I go a little further and turn around, I will have run a marathon when I get home. So he ran the extra half mile, turns around and runs home. It's like 93, 4 degrees. He didn't have anything with him. There was no Gatorade. There was no little aid station or something. And he makes it and he had a good time. That was the thing. He was like 2 hours in 53 minutes or something. And I was like, for a guy that doesn't train and he weighed 200 pounds, I'm like, that's pretty dang good. Like, that's the show me state. You know, who's the kid that's going to take the challenge? And you talk to a recruit and he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to do a little erging, and you call him back a month later, he hasn't done anything. Okay. You know, you're signing your own warrant. And if you're the kid that sat down, even all you have to do is sit down a couple times a week, 3-4 times a week, when you're at that age, and you're going to get better, you know, and it's just, are you trying to get better, or are you just saying it? That's my take on it.
No, it's great. I love that take. We talk about steady state and how important steady state is in, you know, building fitness and whatnot. Where, as a coach, have you seen progression in that with your current athletes? Because, you know, guys are in college, they got a lot going on, but they want to get faster, so they still want to put down the meters. So where do you see this power of steady state in rowing?
Yeah, at first, I think it's hard to do it right. Doing steady state, you know, if you have to be careful because just as I just described a minute ago, we were supposedly on a technique row and there we were on the way in and guys start looking over and getting really competitive. You know, if you're really following your UT1, your UT2, you have a set speed that you should be at. If you start overdoing it, like, oh, you know, it's bite your lip on whether it's right or wrong, because one, when you get competitive, it's good for you. I've never seen a person not be competitive, get better. But if you're doing a ton of it, when you're talking that you're on the erg for 20K in the morning and another 20K in the afternoon, that's where you have to be really careful about it for day after day after day, because you could burn yourself up pretty good. You know, I've seen some of these kids do that. So I think one, tracking how much you're doing, making sure you're tracking it. And then actually, how much are you doing? Are you really doing? You know, a lot of people, hey, I did a 10K today. Great. A 10K is for old guys like me. You know, I'm 55 now. I do my 10K a day. Yeah, it basically keeps me sort of fit. We're not trying to stay fit. We're trying to make warriors here. And when you're trying to make lean, mean fighting machines, it takes more than 10K a day. So tracking that and actually having it be systematic. What are you doing in that those 3x20 minutes or the 4x20 minutes? Is there a technique base today, or you up and down in rates a little bit so you vary it up and learn something as you're doing it? You know, are you to beat the splits a little bit? And then the payout is that you start seeing guys. And it's not in a week, it's not in 2 weeks, it's months later. All of a sudden, guys are making it through hard workouts and their second piece is a lot better. You know, they can repeat the second piece a lot closer with a better frequency than they did a year ago. You know, and it doesn't pay. The payoff is so hard to see. And so many people get, well, I did all this steady state, but it didn't. Well, you've got to give it time. You have to have, you know, that faith in the system and the faith in what you're doing. It really comes to play, and it needs to be long looked at. It's the big picture.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
And earlier we did talk about some of the things that you see with recruits and how, you know, if an athlete is just not putting in the work, you know, like they probably should. But there is a big question that I always get, and I always forget to ask coaches this. And I think I've asked a couple, but I can't recall. What are the major red flags when looking at an athlete?
Red flags against recruiting them?
Like, I've talked to one of your previous assistant coaches about this, and we've touched on social media and things like that. So just little things like that.
You know, there's so much to life now, and schools have asked so much of athletes. To be an athlete anymore, it's you're not just showing up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon anymore. You're showing you are an athlete 24/7 at this point in time at school. So your GPA matters. How you do in school matters. Your attitude, your extra activities, you know, whether you're in the Boy Scouts, you're in the choir, whatever your thing is, you know, that those extra activities and what kind of person you are play into this now as well. So you have to look at yourself and say, how am I the whole picture? Am I a good person? Am I doing things that allow me to show my good person? Am I getting good grades? You're going to look when we start doing our work on a recruit, meaning we're doing our research on somebody, we're going to call your coach. We're going to talk to your coach and say, you know how, and the funny part is every high school coach is going to say, oh, this kid's going to be a great varsity rower. Okay. So let's get over the sparkles and let's start asking real questions. Is he the best in the boathouse? If he's not the best, is he working the hardest? And is he super competitive with the other guys in there? Does he help load the trailer, or does he stand around sort of looking and waiting for somebody to yell at him to load the trailer? Does he jump on the erg first? Does he clean his erg off when he's done and stand it up? Is he a pain to have in the boat, or is he a leader in the boat? Does he talk to the worst guy on the team, or is he too good for the worst guy on the team? You know, what kind of teammate is he? All those little things that can go into that. And we're probably, there's a good chance that unless your grades are really super duper duper, there's a high percentage chance we're probably going to call a guidance counselor too. Quite often we call a guidance counselor to get ideas from a guidance counselor, like what kind of student are you? So you get research pretty well. And I guarantee you, we're going to talk to your parents and have a little chat with them. And again, it's hard with parents because being a parent myself, my kids are the greatest things in the world. You know, there's no doubt about it. They're perfect children, but I know better and everybody else knows better. You know, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses, but we're going to try to find out who you really are and what kind of person you really are. You know, it's sell yourself for who you are. I think being very honest about that is important. And then coming forth and taking a look, especially if you're early in the process, like, what can I do to make myself better? A lot of kids come to me in terms of recruiting and say, hey, I want to study this. Great. You want to study that. What have you done with that to even research it? You know, is your mom or dad a doctor or a lawyer or whatever you want to be? Or did you just read about it and it makes a lot of money, so you want to do it? You know, I can't tell you how often that is. Cornell's a great place in that we have an immense number of majors. We're an enormous school, and we have just the motto of the school is any given person could find any given study. And it's amazing how many weird things we have. Entomology. And the funny thing about our entomology major is they accept probably 6 to 7 kids a year, but they're going to accept 6 or 7 kids a year that really want to study weevils on alfalfa out in Ohio. You know, these kids have done some kind of work on farms and stuff like that, that they really care about this. This is their little niche in life. And they really animal science. A lot of people hear animal science at Cornell. Oh, that's just vets. Well, you know what? They have a dairy science subset. And these are kids, and they say, oh, it's easy to get into that because look at their SATs. They're not that good. These are kids coming off of dairy farms that are milking cows at 3 a.m. They're not going to SAT prep classes. You know, so everybody goes, oh, this is easy to get into. Well, okay, good luck getting into it if you're not from a dairy farm. And I know I was an animal science major, so I knew some of these kids. They were great. They were fantastic. They were really smart, but they were doing a lot of things that nobody else was. You know, so there's all these things going on, and we're going to research that and try to figure out, do you match up?
I had no idea it was that in depth. I really did. I have no idea. Do you know if this is like a universal thing in men's rowing? I mean, women's rowing too? I mean, I have no idea.
You know, I suspect there's some schools where in liberal arts, especially, that people could say, oh, it's not that important to do and to research it as much. And I guess there's certain majors where we hear, you know, your mom and dad are both doctors. You've done some work, research stuff that matches up with that. We're not going to get too in depth because things seem to match up pretty quick. But when somebody comes to me and says, I want to be an entomologist, I'm going to do my research to make sure you really do, because Cornell's going to bat for you saying, yeah, okay, we'll take this kid into entomology, but they really need you to be interested in entomology because they have so few and they're very, very good at it. They're really good at giving you opportunities to study entomology. So I want to make sure that as a rower on my team, you're going to have the most success rowing if you have really good success in the classroom. You know, our team just averaged a 3.4. And for the main part, I really had very few people that had any trouble during a year. They had stressful times and stuff, but they didn't. There was nobody really freaking out because they weren't failing anything. They were all sitting there instead with, hey, I got good grades. The boathouse door just closed. I'm here for an hour and a half or 2 hours to wail on the machine or to go beat Johnny over there or go beat whoever we're racing. And they're not worried about passing class. So me matching you up to the study that you like is enormous. It's huge. Because if you like to study, you're going to be excited about it. You're going to study it. You're going to get good grades. And then we're not going to worry about that when you get on the water.
Mic drop. So this is the next question, because I think we're going to bump into the Q&A here now. If you could assemble an eight's worth of guys, from all the guys that you've coached at Cornell, who would you put in the eight? You know, do a roster and say that.
Oh, that's huge. That's huge. You know, this is that answer that you're going to get somebody mad at. So I want to be really careful on this one, because I've coached some really, really, really good guys. I'd have to start out with, is this just my heavyweight days or my lightweight days too?
I mean, sure, whatever you'd like.
I'd have to do two groups. You know, the lightweights were really special because we won so much with that, and we came from nowhere. We hadn't won anything, and there's some classics in there. But I guess I'm going to start with the heavyweights. The 09 group, when I first took over, was probably the best naturally talented boat I ever coached, in terms of just outright raw ability to race, strength, power. they were really, really good. And I thought we could have been, there was a few things that missed in order to win the whole thing, but oh, that was probably the closest we ever, we ended up fourth at the sprints. And I think arguably, oh gosh, I wish I had coached those guys for 2 years more, because the development they needed was right. It was right there. It was just, they just needed a little bit of time. And I wish I could have been a little bit earlier. If I had to look at a couple guys, I'll give you names. Colin Smith was a stroke I had in 10. He was in that bronze medal boat that at the IRA. He stroked it. He was really good. He's a very quiet guy. You don't hear his name very much. He was U23, I think, in the four with once. He was extraordinary. He was a lot of fun as a stroke man. And another two guys in that boat, I got a name. One was Drew Bostian, and he was super special. This is funny. He ended up being my assistant for a year. He was down at UPenn for a couple of years after he graduated, but he was just a really strong kid. He went home one summer at like 6:21 on the erg, and he started doing 2x5K every day as hard as he could. And he came back the next year at like 6:03. So it was like, wow, that training plan worked, huh? He was phenomenal. And then I've had a bunch of characters in the meantime. That St. John Elliott was really, really good. He was smaller, but he was an incredible boat mover. He could stick it in some great captains. Chris Frendel was in there. I got to ask, I had another set of guys, Alex Karwalski, who's now, he's playing on the national team. He came back and coached for me for a while. He's phenomenal. And it'd be really fun to have him back. That's for sure. Get him back in the saddle. Then obviously there's like Mike Grady. He's on the U.S. team now, and there's Ray Weeks, and there's a whole Mike Colella. I couldn't name an eight. I'd need a piece of paper, and I have a board with all my guys' names on it currently with magnets. And I used to do it with popsicle sticks. I put your name on a popsicle stick. Now I do it on a magnet. I've been told I've become more sophisticated that way, but I would need that. And I bet it would take me weeks, because all of them have such great things and memories that go with it. It's, I don't know, I can't name it. And if I had to go back, I'd have to look at two guys in the lightweight realm. I'd have to certainly point out would be Joe Kiley. He was a stroke man. He was from St. Joe's Prep, and soaking wet, he might've been 142 pounds. He'd make weight. He stroked the boat, and he was one of the stronger guys in the boat. And he was one of the first guys that, I think I was an okay coach. I don't think it was anything special. And he made me a great coach, because he would come into my office like every day and he'd be like, "Coach, what were you trying to do with those drills we did on the water yesterday?" And he and I would have this half hour discussion about what we were trying to accomplish with the boat and stuff. And the next day that afternoon, we'd be on the water and we'd be doing something, and you'd see him stop. He goes, "Hey guys, coach is trying to do this. This is what I want you to feel. Just go with me and do this." And you'd give him these instructions. And all of a sudden the boat would take off and it'd be like, they figured it out. And I was like, holy cow, wait a second. This is the missing link. You know, somebody, it's like he was an interpreter for me or something, but he could turn around and give the feel of the boat to the guys, and they would just build on it. And week after week after week, we built on it. And they ended up going from, you know, we hadn't been doing anything up till that year. And all of a sudden we were starting to win a few races. We end up third at the sprints, which when you haven't been a medaled in 10 or 12 or 15 years, whatever it was, and all of a sudden you medal, it's a whole different ball game. And some people out there are like, "Oh, you haven't medaled, you're not good." Well, come and try to take over a program and figure that part out. That's not easy, teaching people how to do that and getting guys to actually believe it and then accomplishing it. And the second guy I'd have to push out is Colin Farrell. He came a few years after Joe Kiley, St. Joe's Prep guy as well. And it's a funny story, because I went down to the prep, I watched Colin row, and I left, and Bill Lamb was in charge of those days. And Bill goes, "Todd, Colin's going to Princeton." I'm like, "All right." And I went home. There was another guy I was looking at who I was really interested in too. So I was like, "Well, I think I got a shot at this other guy." And it was bothering me, because watching Colin, I'm like, he was pretty good. And I'd like to get, so I finally called Bill back. I'm like, "Bill, can you give me his phone number?" He's like, "He's going to Princeton." I'm like, "Yeah, I know, but I'm not trying my hardest if I don't at least call him. I got to give him the opportunity." So Bill goes, "All right." So he gives me the phone number. I remember calling, "This is Coach Kennett from Cornell. And I know you're going to go to Princeton, but I was wondering if you could give me like 2 minutes. I'll give you my spiel. And at the end of it, if you don't like it, tell me not to call back ever again, and I won't. But if you like it, And he goes, yeah, go ahead. So I talked to him for a couple of minutes and I'm like, what do you think? He goes, geez, I really like what I hear. And I'm like, want to come up on an official? He goes, yeah, actually I would. And the rest is history. He came, he became a 2-year captain. He was stroked the boat for 2 years, and the 2 years he stroked it, it was 21-2, I think, or 21-1. Yeah, it was 21-2. They ended up his senior year, like it, winning the sprints by 0.3 seconds. They were second at the IRA, and it sort of set up the next whole generation of guys that went, you know, first at the IRA for 3 years in a row. He had them as sophomores and set the whole thing up. And it was like, again, he was sort of that mystery man, that missing link of understanding what I was trying to get at and being able to keep the guys behind the scenes recovering and in good spirits and excited and stuff like that. So it was unbelievable when you get characters like that in your cast.
You know, there's two questions I have from this. I want to say thank you for being so in depth with all this stuff. Like you're bringing detail, which I think is awesome. The first thing is that, do you see, I mean, you already saw it, but I did this in high school as well. When a coach is up front with the athletes and they're just saying it how it is, and if there's people like that one athlete that was able to be the interpreter and tell the guys, we got to start doing this to not just make coach proud, but just to get better as a team, right? Mm-hmm. That's when you see success, when those leaders, they stand up and they start doing something with it. The other thing too, I realize is that in other sports, we don't really see a lot of athletes flipping their college decision in rowing. You know, if they get into a great school like Princeton or even Cornell, they're not really trying to go to somewhere else. But you're able to flip it around. That's crazy. And we've seen, you know, Nick Saban, all these guys, you know, retiring and stuff like that. It's been a crazy week of college sports with the national championship. Oh, gosh. But anyways, finding those leaders, I think it just makes programs much stronger.
Finding leaders is a huge deal. And it's hard. People can be built into leaders too. But finding that one guy that really, like I said, Joe and Colin worked for me, and I've had Alex Kowalski started to become one. I had a few other guys in a way, but those two were really special in terms of the effect that they had on the entire team and on me. They made me better. You know, as much as I'm supposed to be a coach and make them better, they made me be better. Their standard. Well, Colin, here's the class. This is the greatest part of this whole thing. One year, his senior year, he walks in, he goes, geez, coach, you know, we're not getting some of these senior guys to do the work. And I'm like, well, Colin, you know, we're out of people. He's like, well, we got the sophomores. And I'm like, you know what you're asking, to try to put 4 sophomores into a varsity. And he goes, I can train them if you can teach them how to row. And I'm like, you know, there's still a competitive streak in me as old as I'm getting. And I was like, so you're saying you can coach it, you can train them. If you can train them, by God, I'll be able to coach them. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we were off by 0.3 seconds in one race and 1 second at another at a perfect season. So it's like, you know, it was a pretty fun thing to have that kind of internal, just competition, stressful. I don't know if you want to call it stress, but competition with each other, just like how much better can we make it and what more can we do, you know, and you can build people to be that way. But at the same time, not everybody is a leader, meant to be a leader. You know, a lot of people try to be leaders and make speeches and all that kind of stuff. But I think the first part is by you doing your part. Just your part itself. Like, are you being the best that you can be? And then how do you take others along with you? You know, and a lot of people miss that first part pretty big. And when they do, then it becomes a problem later on. Like, well, he's not doing it, why should I? You know, and you get all that kind of stuff. And there's other times too, where I think I'm trying to build people and they're not ready for that kind of commitment. They're not really looking for it. And, you know, that famous saying of who wants to win? Everybody raises their hand. Okay, let's go practice tomorrow morning at 4:00. Not a whole lot of people to fill up. You know, there's a big difference between the two.
Well, prior to this last statement you made, I was going to say that's sports. You know, like, people want to be competitive. If you want to be at the top, you got to train like you're at the top. And that's a lot of meters and rowing specifically. You know, you got to work hard. And the excuses.
Always an excuse.
You know, some are understandable, but a lot of the times it's not. It's just a push off the work. So this is a question I have for you. It's not even on the camera. But
all right,
how the heck did you learn how to catch a fish barehanded? How? That's crazy.
Oh, I've been fishing's been a huge part of my family life and my whole life. So I've done a lot of fishing, and I was a fishing guide up in Alaska for a lot of years. In the summers, for 12 summers, I was a fishing guide, a fly fishing guide. And you start handling enough fish, you get pretty good at grabbing them.
I mean, on a coaching launch too is nuts to me. I mean, that's crazy. If you
Which one
guys,
did you see that? Did you see the Atlantic salmon in the inlet?
yeah, I saw the video that Cornell posted. You know, I was like, this is unreal. If anyone hasn't seen it, go check Cornell Heavy's Instagram, where you can also find them to for recruiting as well. They posted a video of Coach Todd on catching a fish on the launch barehanded. It blew me away. It was nuts. All right, next question here. This is about coxswains, which is not to toot my own horn, but I'm curious about this too. Advice for coxswains wanting to get recruited at Cornell. Now, you had Kevin McCarthy as the assistant coach. He was a previous coxswain, lightweight coxswain, well, lightweight team cox. Anyways, I'm curious to know how that's working out right now, and also how you scope those coxswains.
First of all, Kevin's wild. He's funny as anything, and he's an absolute go-getter. Loved working with him. He was one of those perfect assistants, as far as I was concerned. Exceedingly loyal, very open, had great communication skills with me, and was always willing to work. So, hearts out to him. He's doing a great job. It was unfortunate to lose him, but I think is in a good place at CRI there. So, he seems to be really happy in his life. So, coxswains, getting recruited as a coxswain, that's not an easy thing, because it seems like there's a lot of great coxswains out there. A lot of coxswains have 4.0 GPAs, which I think if you're looking at the Ivy League and you're going to be a coxswain, you have to be really on top of your grades, because one thing that they're looking at is that all Ivies have limited number of spots. And in terms of limited spots and recruiting, they're going to need you to be one of the high band people that they're looking at. And then it becomes down to, how well do you know rowing? You know, are you just in the back of the boat steering, or do you actually know rowing? You know, to me, everybody comes in and they say, here's my tape, here's my tape, here's my tape. I usually call the coach first and I say, how straight do they go? To me, I need a coxswain. I think a coxswain is worth their weight in gold and platinum combined with a couple diamonds on top if they're really good. But the most basic of basic coxswains, what I need somebody that can get on and off the dock safely, that can go straight. Because if I get somebody at least that gets on and off the dock safely, and I'm really feeling that they're responsible with the boat and the lives that are in that boat, that's one thing off my chest. And the second one is, if you can go straight, then I can sit alongside you and I can coach, where I can actually say, okay, here's the rate, you call the rate, get them up to that, and then I can sit there and I don't have to pay attention to what you're doing, and I can just look at the guys and, you know, here, strokes you, da, 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 whoever I'm onto that day, I can actually do that. So there's the first basic thing. Can you do those things? Then I think it comes down to, do you understand the rowing stroke so that you're riding skill drills properly? And if you're getting drills properly and understanding, like when I'm not there, you know, hey, here's a few drills. This is the progression to go in, because going at legs only, then to add this in, to do this in, will allow us to have this kind of set, or a few pauses here is going to get everybody combined together. If you understand why you're doing those things, you need to understand better than they do on why you're doing it, because you're going to call it. You're the captain of the boat. I may be the admiral, but you're the captain. And I, you know, if you understand where you're going and what you're doing it for, it's a lot different than, I've also had coxswains just start randomly calling drills, like, let's do this drill. And you're like, you don't hear why you're doing the drill. You don't hear what the coxswain's trying to get the boat to do with that. And all of a sudden, the rowers in there are like, great, we're doing another drill. That's just fancy. Great, we're pausing here or doing that. There's no point to it. You need to have a point. The motivation part, it's really fun when you get a really good coxswain that can really motivate you, no doubt. I don't know if there's a rower that's at my level, at the level that I'm coaching at, that isn't motivated. If they're doing that much work, they're motivated. Yes, it helps to have a motivated coxswain. It's a lot of fun. But to me, that part is the icing on the cake. That's the part that makes them go from really, really good to super. You know, that last little bit. All those other things to me are way more important. You as the captain of the boat. So to me, somehow I need you to get that across, whether it's the result of the boats that you've been coxing. You've been in some really good boats. We watch them row, and it's like, whoa, those boats are rowing really well. We call up your coach, and your coach is like, this kid is there early. He's able to help organize the whole thing. He understands the kids in the boat. He goes really straight. He's never wrecked a boat. All that stuff is going to be the add up for us. You know, I love coxswains because they're so aggressive when it comes to getting recruited. We probably have 30 or 40 coxswains a year for usually one spot emailing us, and they're sending an email a week, and it's like, whoa, gosh, here comes another one and another recording. Hey, would you listen to my recording? I can only listen to so many recordings. You know, it's, to me, it's more about, can you communicate what's going on in your team? Can you communicate what the rowing stroke is? And I don't need to hear your recording every week. I need to know, can you do all that other stuff? That's the important part to me. And, you know, how does your coach take it then and is able to betray you? That's probably long-winded, but that's sort of where I am.
I appreciate you doing this because I think for me, when I was in high school, it was so tough for me to explain all these things coming from a small program. And a lot of coxswains do come from small programs that are awesome gems, yep, but they don't come from the Sarasotas, the Preps, the Newports, the Marins. They don't come from there. And so it's hard to show, you know, I can do all these great things, but maybe you just can't see them in person yet because my team just doesn't have that amount of volume to go to these big races to do that. So it's so tough to explain that. And we don't have the ERC score to show you as our.
I would put in an asterisk on that. I didn't really acknowledge that. So I'm saying you have to have good results and a good boat. If you come from a small program, you're right. It's really hard for a coxswain to show these things. And I think that's where going to a camp over the summer, if you can get into a Penn AC or, you know, one of these bigger camps where, better yet, fighting for a junior team spot, if you can get into those where you're in competition and you can win out, that goes even bigger. You know, that goes enormously. So, you know, it's one of those things that I think it's hard, but I think there are ways to do it. And being able to show your leadership on a team like that is, even on a small team, can have huge ramifications in terms of how we're going to see you.
You know, I've talked to other coaches about this, and I don't want to take too much more of your time, but we've talked to coaches about this, about having a micing up all the coxswains and doing like a regional challenge where each junior, you know, each region in the country, they have little winter races and spring races throughout, almost like how to do it, the championship stuff, but just keeping it a little bit more, I don't know, just not as crazy. Just get on the course. You just do either 1500 or 1000, whatever it is. College coaches can come around to the different regions from different times of the year and check them out. And you can hear all the coxswains mic'd up. It would be pretty cool for marketing, yeah, publicity for rowing, and also just to scout athletes as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was just my other idea. But anyways, last two questions with the Q&A, and then we'll step into something else. When the water is not rowable, how often are you in the weight room or on the ergs or RP3s?
Well, I'm lucky because I happen to be on a body of water when we're on Cayuga. That is awesome. And the awesomeness comes in that once it's open from ice, there's no coming off the water unless there's lightning. You know, lightning would be the one thing, but we get maybe one flood a year where the water gets a little bit bad, but if it floods, we can go to the lake as long as the wind's not too high. And so I don't think we've missed a day due to once the water's open and it's warm enough that there's no ice that we've had to do that. We actually come off the water frequently to do a weight session. So we do two or three weight sessions a week, depending on fall or spring. So we'll come off the water, and we have our weight facilities down at the boathouse. So we have a really nice boathouse, and it's we'll be down there two or three times a week. And when I say about the water, even if the wind blows, we have about 4,000 meters of water that is ultra protected. 2,500 meters, that's only three lanes wide. It can blow 50 miles. Let a tornado happen and it won't get down there. You know, we can row on anything when it comes to that. Does it get cold in Ithaca? Yes, it does. I'm not going to BS that part. But the funny part is the city itself is at only 300 feet. The lake is 40 miles long. Any kind of north wind, even at 0 degrees, when there's a north wind, it picks up the temperature of the lake and it really hits Ithaca, and it doesn't get that cold downtown. So for instance, at the boathouse, we can have, say we have an inch or two of snow. At my house, which is at 1400 feet elevation, we could have 2 or 3 feet of snow. It's that protected down there. Usually it's 2 to 3 weeks difference in terms of this is a nerdy number, 2 to 3 weeks difference in the daffodils blooming. The boat ones at the boathouse will be 2 to 3 weeks earlier than the ones at my house. And I live 10 miles away. So the boathouse is pretty protected. In terms of ice, depends on the year. Usually we've been out a lot recently in February. We do quite a bit of rowing in February. I've seen it as late as 2 or 3 weeks into March. But most of the time it's late February, early March when we're on the water.
Well, that's good to know for all the recruits out there that want to know about how it snows out there in Ithaca, New York. And then talking about Chris Kerber, because when he was not there anymore, that was pretty sad. The lightweights were, I know some of them, they were all kind of bummed about that. What was your first reaction to that?
You know, that was a tough one. I wasn't part of that decision. He had something with the Cornell, and I'm not part of it. All I know is we had to try to find a replacement. At first, it was we were going to combine the lightweight men and with the heavyweight men, and I was going to train them down here in Orlando. And we were lucky enough to find Tyler Nace. And in Tyler, I think we found a rock star. You know, he's just unbelievable. This guy, I don't know if you know Tyler at all. Tyler is a Princeton guy, and he is a training phenom. He's been on the Olympic team. He's been on X amount of national teams. He was the U.S. Lightweight single sculler. So he comes in, and his training is unbelievable to this day. We still train. He and I train a little bit together. He does a lot more training than I do, but we'll sit down on the erg a couple times a week or something like that. And we bike home usually every night from practice right now during camp so we can talk rowing and stuff. But his training, he has not let that team miss a single step. I think they might even be gaining again. So I'm really excited to see what's going to happen in terms of We keep piecing, the two teams are piecing together a lot, and the small boats, the lightweights are doing quite well in the pair right now. So we'll see how it goes.
I want to know about the facilities outside of, you know, so you have the erg room, the boathouse, right? But you also have other stuff like that. So, you know, athletes always want to know what they're going to get, or like, what are the perks of like a student athlete that you're going to get at Cornell?
Let me start at the boathouse, because the boathouse is the mecca of everything as far as I'm concerned. I went to Cornell. I graduated in 91, but to me, the home is down at the boathouse. The boathouse was renovated in 2010. It's enormous. It has 7 or 8 bays, depending on how you count double deep bays and how you call extra wide bays, plus a shop. So it's huge. There's plenty of room for everybody and all the boats that we could possibly handle. We have extra rack space. What we have also is upstairs is an enormous erg room that has 70 ergs in it. Plus it has RP3s. It has a couple gamuts ergs. It has 16 bikes plus assault bikes, has a full weight facility to it. Then locker rooms. And in the locker rooms, lightweight men, heavyweight men each have one, and women have one. The lockers are heated and ventilated. It took me a long time to figure out how to do it, but I worked with a construction crew, and we built mock lockers to see. We took a uni, dumped it in water, wrung it out, and hung it up in these mock lockers for a while, and we figured out how much ventilation they needed with how much heat, so that if you take a damp uni, and we have spinners in the shower, so you walk in a shower, take your shower, but keep your uni, wash it, throw it in the spinner. When you're done, you hang it up in the locker. By the next practice, it's clean, dry. So all the locker rooms don't even smell. So there you go. And you'll have 2 or 3 lockers. Most guys have a couple lockers because we made the rooms extra big and with extra lockers so everybody could fit everything they need into there. Our plan is we're trying to get ourselves a new weight facility. So it's just one big weight facility. So all the weight stuff is in one place down on a ground so we can drop stuff. Currently, we have some upstairs where we can't drop the weights on the floor. But in the next couple of years, we should be looking at a whole new weight facility down there. We do have a designated strength and conditioning coach now who comes down on weightlifting days, but this would now be his own facility down there. And our erg room would get even bigger then. Up on campus, we have our tank room that has two complete setups where you have port starboard, moving water tanks on both sides. And then we have 24 ergs in there, plus a few bikes and a little bit of weight stuff. That's at our offices on campus. Plus we have an RP3 room, which currently has 27 or 28 RP3s in it. And that's all mirrored and all that kind of stuff. So we have plenty of facility, and there's the weight facility on campus, which is pretty spectacular. That weight facility doubles with the football and hockey teams and all that kind of stuff. So it has all this stuff that you can get hooked up on, and chains and bands and all kinds of cool stuff that we'll play with all winter long when we have time to get there and we're not in a rush to be on the water and off the water. So we can take a, you know, Saturdays, especially, we go up and take our time and get an hour and a half lift in versus during the year when we're down on the water, we come off the water and we might be doing like a 45 minute row or and then coming in and hitting a 45 minute lift, something like that, or an hour long lift. So that's wow. The kind of facility. And again, the lake is 40 miles long. So you got 40 miles of lake to go explore on. And then when it blows too hard, you got this 4,000 meter channel. So every round trip is 8K. You do two or three of those and you've gotten your mileage in for the day, you know, or for that practice, certainly. And then the bottom end of that, to make the water even better, is about 1,300 meters dead straight with a buoy line on it. So we can go down there and do all our pairs matrixing and our straight four matrixing, stuff like that. And you're ultra protected. No wakes ever in terms of once we start it or a coach needs to take that over in the morning, something like that, it becomes just yours. And it gets us pretty good in the small boats. So what am I missing?
Dining and, like, I guess, private registration for classes or things like
that. Oh, dining halls. Sure. Dining halls at Cornell, you know, we're a huge school. And I believe there's like 12, 13, 14, whatever. It's in a huge number. My daughter brings us into these things. She's at Cornell right now. So at the end of the year, she gets the swipes done on her little card. She has a couple extra. We'll go. My son goes bananas. The availability of different stuff that's really fresh, great produce. So there's really healthy eating. There's varieties of it, whether it's vegetarian, whether it's some kind of fish, whether it's some kind of red meat, whatever, is out of this world. And it's not just breaded heavy stuff. It's really healthy food, which allows you to be healthy and lean if you want to be, or you can be really, you can go up to the full grill and get yourself deep fried, whichever one you'd like. You know, it's amazing. And then that goes for the motto of the school with everything else, any given person, any given study, we have everything. Liberal arts, our engineering is really strong. Our businesses are amazing between the hotel school and our actual business school. Our ag schools, number one in the world, everything from plant and animal sciences to communications to biologies, all the different engineerings that go along with that, architectures. We have human ecology, which is one of a kind. We have our ILR school, which is industrial and labor relations. That's one of a kind, only ones of their kind in the nation. So it makes for an amazing assortment of mind power. If you're into the that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I just know when I walk around on that campus, I am a peon. I'd be very careful because there's some really smart people.
That's awesome. Having smart people around campus only makes the campus pretty cool to be around. You know, it's people that can make you smarter, and it's a good environment to be. Last question I have is about the IRA. This, you know, another year of the IRA, but I wanted to know, you know, there's been, you know, Dartmouth lights were cut back in the day. Well, it wasn't back in the day. It was only a couple of years ago. Stanford was cut. Yeah, that was George Washington. That was crazy. Do you see anything happening with the IRA, or if you can give us any hints for what's going on with that?
Well, with men's rowing versus women's rowing, I think you got two different sides of it. You know, women's rowing, I don't think is going anywhere. It's holding strong and gaining. I think it's still gaining a little bit of strength. And I think that's great. I think the question comes down to a lot of these schools is our alumni bases and how strong that we as male rowers, when we graduate, give back and continue to support our teams. You know, look at Stanford. Stanford got cut and they came back. Why? Because the alumni base was strong enough to go to the school and say, look, we can fund this whole thing and we will fund you in order as well. Not just athletics. And I think a lot of these programs, they'd be really smart if the men of these programs that graduate continue to keep funding these places. And better yet, not just men's rowing, but also combine with women's rowing at these places. If you combine on with that and the two help each other, you become even more integrated into the university. You know, and that would be my point. The more that any of these alumni groups become part of their university, high up in the academics and within the athletics part, it's going to be even harder. You're a good person. You're a bigger, more well-rounded person. You have more connections, and nobody's going to want to see you go. So I think it's important, instead of us sort of becoming, you know, even tighter and saying just men's rowing is so important, I think it's important that we say rowing. You know, keeping the lightweight men strong, I think, is really important. Trying to keep the lightweight women strong is important. All the teams that do have lightweight women, that do have lightweight men, Cornell, it looks at all three of their teams as one. The CRA, the Cornell Rowing Association, we raise a lot of money every year annually. And we don't look at one team as more important than another. It's all teams, whoever needs the money, we get it to the places that it's needed so that it's not a question. We have the resources that we need in order to try to succeed and allow these kids the opportunity to be great.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I just wanted to say BMA.
Oh, there we go. I love it.
All right,
go Big Red and BMA.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Hudson.
Of course.